You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we will never reach peak farce. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you love witnessing the farce and you loved it as much as I did in the year 2018, then you are in the right show. This is our Peak Farce Awards 2018 edition, where we talk about all of the farce and all of the best things in the year 2018. Spoiler alert, there wasn't a whole lot of the best things, and there was a whole lot of the farce. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
From our nation's capital of farce, you should say. Because, man, what a year it was, 2018. Was it last year that people had the phrase hashtag F2017? Or was that 2016? How old am I?
No, that was 2017. And then this year, we in the midside, or at least I, had the catchphrase, it's 2018. But I used that in real life, and people were like, yeah, you're right. So whenever anything got really farcical, and people were like, what is going on? I just went, guys, it's 2018. And they were like, oh, yeah, you're right.
So it is hard to believe that we are completing the sixth year of this show. Going into year seven? My goodness.
Absolutely insane. And so much has changed. I mean, you're a dad now. You took like half the season off for paternity leave.
I did. I'm not even here now. That's how off I am. So, yeah, I'm a dad. I own a house. It's crazy. It's crazy, crazy times.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, freshly back from a trip to see my sister in Germany and went on a nice little Scandinavian cruise, Baltic Sea cruise, and saw some cities I had never been to before. And yeah, I'm glad to be back. I literally just flew in today, so we're getting jet lagged, William, so I might be a little punch drunk. We'll see.
Is that why you were talking so much in the pre-show?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm hyped up on caffeine because I got to stay up. You know, I don't want to have this jet lag carry into Christmas.
Well, we appreciate you doing that for us. It wouldn't have been a year-end show without you. You've really added a lot to the show this year, and not having you the past 2 weeks was kind of a little somber, and I'm glad you made it back for the Peak Farce Awards.
Well, thanks. Me too. I noticed you saved all the gay stories for last week, and I really enjoyed it, because unlike Daniel, I actually listened to the show, so I was laughing my ass off on a boat between Tallinn and Stockholm listening to the show last week.
Well, I'm glad you listened to it, because the episode was named after you. I found it really ironic that all of the gay stuff broke when you were gone.
Yeah, it was very ironic.
But before we go into the top five news stories of the year, according to us here in the midside, I have to admit everything. Yeah, it feels like I'm admitting everything. Admit something to you midsiders out there.
Justin is coming out of the closet.
I'm coming out of the closet as a California State employee.
Oh, what? My God.
Somehow that's worse than being gay.
I swear to God, like, I applied for jobs in a bunch of places and I had a bunch of interviews, and everyone was like, you get 5 days off and you have to work for minimum wage. The only place I could work in a reasonable wage and actually get decent time off was for working for Caltrans. Now, I want to be clear, I am in public information, which presents its own set of problems, which I'm sure I'm continuing rant about in 2018 or 2019. Let me just put it this way. Public information is supposed to be telling the taxpayer what is being done with their money, but the Caltrans, the Department of Transportation, really uses it to advocate for more government. So there's that sort of moral problem I have.
But who could have saw that coming?
Yeah, who could have saw that coming, that government does that? You know, they're completely moral. They always do the don't advocate, just educate, and make it look like you're not advocating. Okay, yeah, people are morons. So I am in public information, and I am completely on the taxpayer's side. And they love talking to me for it when I'm, like, in public. They're like, yeah, yeah, you listen to me, and you understand. I'm like, yeah, I get it. And I will have more and more stories because, gentlemen, everything you hear about government employees is 100% true. It's the system is set up in a way that you can't be that any other way.
You are our very own Ron Swanson.
In fact, I asked people about that. And people, I was like, am I a hypocrite because I'm a libertarian who works for the state? And Daniel, you said, well, no, you're just like Zack Snyder. You love irony. And then somebody else replied to me, no, you're just Ron Swanson. So when I passed probation, I bought a Ron Swanson Funko Pop and put it on my desk in front of my computer.
Excellent.
Well, I guess the show will now include additional therapy sessions on how to deal with working in a mixed economy. But as someone with experience, you know, from my years working for the government, I can tell you that in some ways it's easy and in other ways it's hard, but it can be done. You can have your principles and work for the system. There's ways that you can improve things and save taxpayer money and do the things that are legitimate, and it definitely can be done.
More to come in 2019, but before then we have to cap off 2018. Let's do it, guys. Let's talk about the top five news stories of 2018 according to us here on the Midside in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. Isn't just a fad.
We thought 2017 was a farcical year, and we look back now and think that was quite quaint of us to think that, because 2018 somehow outdid it. This was the year, of course, of the midside, it was the year of the midside, but more so the midterm elections, which had their own set of farce, and it was the year of the royal wedding, which was an interesting debacle. But no, those things did not make the top five news stories of this year. In fact, there are many things that didn't make the top five farcical news stories of this year. But we hope that the ones we chose really do tickle your farcical fancy. So let's kick it off at number five here with Cambridge Analytica. Do you remember this bad boy? So to remind you, Cambridge Analytica was a company that was founded by a psychologist and software developer, and it was basically it drew from information from a personality quiz on Facebook. And if anyone took this personality quiz, it not only took the data of the person taking the quiz, but it took the data of all of that person's friends on Facebook, whether or not they had agreed to it or not. Cambridge Analytica then used this information to create psychographic profiles about voters that they then sold to the likes of Steve Bannon and the folks at the Trump campaign. So, of course, Facebook was raked over the coals when this came out earlier this year, when The Guardian released their special report on it, and it had led to $170 billion in valuation loss of Facebook over that week, as well as congressional hearings, and it led to some other things, like figuring out eventually that Russia had used Facebook to buy some ads that quote unquote influenced the election. And basically,
the story keeps going. In the last couple of weeks, it was released that Facebook shared information that it doesn't share with other partners for privacy concerns. It shared it with the likes of Microsoft and Google. So the story just kept going all throughout the year.
Absolutely. It was the story that kept on giving.
Not to mention that we still have the whole Russian collusion proceedings with Mueller and all of that because of this.
And we have the Democratic operatives that came out saying that it was just a test. They were just testing, but they actually messed with the Roy Moore election. That whole rant he went on saying that it was that the Russian bots was a false flag. Oh, now the story is out. It actually was a false flag.
Well, that's one of the most delicious things I think about this entire story was the left getting so mad, but they're only mad because it happened to them first. Like, usually they're on the forefront of this kind of stuff, But the fact that the other side of the aisle, I don't know if I really want to call Trump the other side of the aisle, but you get the point I'm making. The fact that somebody other than them used this technique first, I think really got them.
Yeah, they're supposed to be the ones that cheat with technology, damn it. Goodness gracious. So,
don't vote.
This was a story that kept on giving and, of course, led us all to delete our Facebook accounts. Oh, wait.
I barely use Facebook anymore.
I do think this kicked off the beginning of the end for Facebook.
Yes.
Now, I prognosticated before that Donald Trump had a 0% chance of winning the election, so take all of my prognostications for what they're worth, but I do think that Facebook in the next few years will essentially be a non-entity or will be some sort of data company that doesn't have a front-facing mechanism.
You're wrong about one thing, Daniel, because Facebook has done something very clever. It's called buying Instagram, so nobody realizes that Instagram is Facebook just under a different name. They're like a shapeshifter.
Super clever. Yeah.
I didn't say it was Instagram. Clever to us.
It's super effective. So, continuing a sort of internet theme here, one of the top stories of this year has to be
Number four.
Has to be that on June 11th, the FCC allowed the net neutrality rules to expire that had regulated the internet since Obama was in office, since he had his open internet order. This, of course, stopped the regulation of the internet like a utility and allowed it to be regulated sort of how it was before, you know, when it became awesome. This, of course, led to calls of doom and gloom, and the New York acting Attorney General Barbara Underwood at the time said that the repeal of net neutrality would allow internet service providers to put their profits before the consumers they serve and control what we see, do, and say online. Of course, none of that has happened, and the internet is something like 3 times faster than it was at the same time last year because they're outside of this horrible regulatory burden. And things continue to get better and better and better. So no doom and gloom, but this was certainly things that I saw marches for here in the district and saw people online just prognosticating that this would be the end of the internet.
Yeah, if anything, we see it? This kind of censorship is not coming from ISPs, right? And I'm using the censorship term loosely here, right? What we're seeing is people being unpersoned by the big four media companies, right? Google, Facebook, Twitter, right? And Patreon, as we'll get into. But, you know...
Patreon's number four?
Well, no. But I just meant, like, these are the companies. The companies are the ones doing this, dancing this line between publisher and platform. And somehow not doing the dance very well.
Well, it's harder and harder these days to not reveal the whole projection thing the left does with the whole net neutrality thing. They were projecting, they were saying this is what we would do if we were in charge. So of course, what did they do with the platforms that they're in charge of? Exactly what you just said, William. Twitch, I have to ask you too, is it because net neutrality got repealed or got whatever they call it taken away that they were able to start doing these things? If net neutrality were in place, would Twitter and Patreon and YouTube not be able to do what they're doing?
No.
Yeah,
they were doing these things. Yeah, they just weren't doing them as much.
Yeah, right now, I think the trouble that Facebook and Patreon and YouTube and others are going to run into is the way the law is set up, the protections that they get from copyright lawsuits and, you know, slander lawsuits and things like that is that they argue that they're a platform. But the more that they editorialize, and by editorialize here, I mean like community strikes and guideline strikes on videos on YouTube and, you know, Patreon unpersoning Sargon and things like that. PayPal did the same thing to Sargon. The more they do that, the less they can argue in court that they are a platform because they are editorializing. This is why that hearing where Zuckerberg looked like a robot in Congress was so important. He was asked by Ted Cruz, are you a platform or is this a free speech issue? In other words, like the company, you know, the government has the rules set up, and we could talk about the morality of the rules that as they are now, but the rules as they are now is if you're claiming that you're a company and it's your free speech right and your free association right to remove folks from your platform, then you're not operating as a platform anymore. You're operating as an editor because an editor certainly has those rights. to associate with the reporters or, you know, content creators that they want to, and to decide what is and is not on the platform and all those sorts of things. But a platform provider, that is much more restricted, right? The idea is like, hey, I'm open for people who meet a certain criteria, like the public, right? As long as you meet this criteria and you're not doing anything that's against the law, then you're okay. The issue is, you know, all these San Francisco tech companies, they all are operating as if hate speech is illegal, which in the United States, we have free speech, not anti-hate. We don't have hate speech, right? So they're operating as if hate speech was illegal and trying to walk both sides of that platform and editor sort of things. And I'm sure someone will correct me. It's not editor. I forgot what the other clause is, but that's the distinction that's seen in the law right now.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time. There's a second attack that I've seen people start to gain steam on, which is essentially a violation of terms of service. That is, essentially, Facebook is, or these other platforms, are in breach of contract when they essentially change the definitions of things after someone has created a platform under a certain contract. So I don't know if that will also succeed. But,
I don't think that will succeed, only because these terms of service are written so broadly and written so that they can be changed arbitrarily at any time. All the power here is with the platform as far as what the terms of service are. But again, I think the more important thing will be if one of these content providers can make the claim that there's some sort of collusion, like especially in the Sargon case between Patreon, PayPal, and YouTube, or if there is or someone making the argument, okay, fine, if this is your right to do it, then you are not a platform anymore, and you need to be treated like a newspaper, right, like, or a magazine, where you're responsible for the content on your site.
Well, let's fold that critique back into this whole net neutrality thing. Terms of service contracts, if you're an ISP, an internet service provider, and then you start blocking certain sites or slowing down certain sites, as it was claimed they would do if there was this complete freedom on the internet, which there is now, wouldn't you also be becoming a publisher or an editor or whatever this term is? So doesn't that prove that the arguments against net neutrality never even held any water? Because who's going to want an ISP that's going to start censoring their content when there are other ISPs that don't do that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think although there are still lots of parts of the United States with only one service provider, as we are seeing with mobile, like my parents live way out in the country in Michigan, their ISP is just a hotspot because that's the fastest internet they can get. And they've got four choices of cellular providers in their, you know, way out in the country in Michigan. So even now we're seeing, especially with 5G coming in 2019 and 2020, this whole like ISP monopoly is slowly eroding and it's not going to be an issue anymore. But with the content providers, it's a little different because you have this. It's increasingly looking like there's some shenanigans going on with the payment processors, and I think that we'll find out in 2019 exactly what those shenanigans are.
So let's be clear then. The reason this is the number four story of the year is because this is a blow for freedom. I can't think of a place where more freedom, less government, was found than with the net neutrality expiring. And it's proven that it works. That's the big thing. This is why this is a story. It proves that everything they say about freedom is wrong and that freedom works. Daniel?
It works because it's moral. Absolutely. And it's moral because it works. It's funny how that works. So number three, to turn a little more serious here, is the Parkland school shooting, which happened on Valentine's Day of this year when a gunman killed 14 students and 3 staff members at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And of course, previous mass shootings had prompted passionate calls for gun control laws, but this time it was a little bit different. A group of student survivors at the school soon joined by allies nationwide, launched the March for Our Lives movement and organized massive walkouts and peaceful protests at schools across the country. This, of course, gives us the likes of one David Hogg, who will be attending Harvard this fall, by the way, despite the fact that he has a horrible SAT score and couldn't get into other schools, and the tweet he announced it in had a grammar error in it. But nonetheless, this was an enormous story, not just because of the magnitude of the shooting itself, but because of the aftermath and the notion that we're not allowed to criticize the students who were who survived this attack because they are survivors and because they are students. We, in fact, must listen to them because children, Justin, are our future.
You don't hate children, do you? That's a South Park episode from years ago when they still nailed it. Up to this day. The other thing about this story, Daniel, is even the story we used to research for our number three story of the year said that this was the AP story of the year. And I think this story and everything you just said about it exemplifies the anti-gun narrative that really took hold in this country in the past year, in the past 12 months. The idea that this would even be the top story of the year when, was it this year? I think it was this year on the show we covered that school shootings are actually down from the 90s.
Yeah.
So that this was so hyped. And as you said, that rampant emotionalism, right? If you have an emotional experience, you can't be criticized. And using children to forward your agenda and using tragedy to forward your agenda.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, is it... It keeps striking me as a reminder that the far left is really a religion. And the reason I say that is I remember as a kid the fawning that people would do over folks who had their born again stories be so that they were so depraved before they came to Jesus, right? There was no you don't get any street cred for in the church for being a decent person and then, you know, coming to Jesus, right? And that's the same thing here. Like, we don't talk about in the media, the mainstream media doesn't talk about what's that guy's name, Kyle Kashuv, the guy that also is a survivor of Parkland and now works for Turning Point USA and is a Second Amendment advocate, but also like someone who wants smart gun reform and like advocates for that. Like, we're not all fawning over which college he's going to go to, but David Hogg, somehow, he fit that victim bill, which is surprising, right? Because he's a male. You'd think they'd pick someone else. But I guess the person with the... who's the chick with the shaved head? I guess she wasn't as media-friendly. So instead we get David Hogg, who I'm sure will have an illustrious career at Harvard with his mediocre SAT score. I mean, how does he get over? Like, we already know Harvard's getting sued for not admitting Asians because they don't have people skills, right? Just like automatically, yeah. if you're Asian, you don't have people skills. So I can't wait to see how he survives at Harvard.
I do want to point out to Harvard, I'm sure they know this already, but at some point, if you keep allowing in people like David Hogg, who are intellectually awful, and not just because I disagree with him, but because he's honestly fairly stupid, it's not going to mean anything to go to Harvard anymore. Unless you start again letting in the best of the best students, a Harvard education is simply going to mean a social justice education.
Well, yeah. You're confusing what they value. They don't value education anymore. As social justice has increasingly infected more and more parts of academia, that the science and truth and art are no longer the goal of college education, right? That's not it. Those are all white male values.
Well, David Hogg proving once again that white privilege is still a thing.
Well, so, to be fair, I think they didn't go with the chick with the shaved head because she's most likely to join Antifa, and the media is trying to distance itself from Antifa.
Hmm. Well, there you go. That's political discrimination, which is not allowed in D.C.
Well, that was story number three. Story number two hit a little closer to home for two of our midsiders. Story number two is the California wildfires, which were the largest in the state's history and, in fact, burned an insane amount of land. I was trying all day to find the exact amount, but the numbers I found are probably out of date, but it's more than 283,000 acres.
More than most of the countries I visited, I think, on this trip.
Indeed, more than 1,000 people at one point were missing.
Daniel, the number is everywhere. That is the number.
That is the number?
Yeah, everywhere. That's what's burned in California. Everywhere.
Oh, I see. So this was, I mean, Justin, you could actually see the fires from many places you were visiting on a daily basis. You too, William? I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
some of the photos I saw were very famous stretches of highway that you could see the hills burning.
So, yeah, the one that affected Ventura and the Malibu area, that one was definitely visible from my work in Santa Monica. And my roommate and business partner, his mother had to evacuate, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of folks were affected in this area here in LA.
Yeah, I mean, it's even the last two years I've been able to see the fires. And actually, ironically, 2 years ago, the fire was started by Caltrans. They left a flare out, which burnt a lot of things in the Anaheim Canyon, Anaheim Hills area. I mean, I didn't say that. Wait, I'm off probation. Yeah, I said that. What now? That's some public information you all need. I probably just got fired. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, no, it's everywhere. It's everything. It's just, to me, this story encapsulates California. It encapsulates leftism. It encapsulates socialism. You literally are next to a whole lot of water and your state's on fire. It boggles the mind how you could be so incompetent. And then, of course, we had the news story about the fire department or whoever complaining about their data speeds because they didn't properly buy the plan they needed, and then they got throttled in cost because of they needed more for the emergency. And of course, they blame that on the private company who's, you know, smartly making money off of their stupidity. It's just, it's California in a nutshell. And it reminds me of that meme. You know the meme of the dog surrounded by fire, and it just says, "This is fine."
Mm-hmm.
That's what California is, and that's what the wildfires were. Just everyone in California is looking around. They're like, "I'm paying a shitload of taxes. I can't have anything nice, and now it's all burning. This is fine." That's California in a nutshell. This is where you're headed, America, if you all keep embracing leftism and keep letting them win. This is where you're headed.
Yeah, there's been so many stories about this that it's hard to keep up, but there were stories about how some environmental policies, if not led to the fire directly, sort of exacerbated the fire, where they weren't allowed to deforest some of these areas that badly needed it because of drought. Obviously, the water usage from the ocean became an issue, et cetera, et cetera.
Wait, you mean the drought that they could have just desalinated the ocean for to begin with? So this is twice?
Yes.
Living next to an ocean could have prevented this?
Turns out, yes. So this was, of course, an enormous story, and there are still many people who are affected by it who are still rebuilding and trying to get their lives back together. So some sadness there.
So thanks, California taxpayers, for the job for a year and a half to 2 years. I'm going to live off of you and then move to Florida. Peace!
We're going to Florida. You and Howard Dean.
Well, I mean, Howard Dean's like an old white dude at this point, right? Like, he's probably in Florida.
Yes, he's probably in Florida. Let's not kid ourselves. Now, anyone who has listened to The Midside for any amount of time in 2018 will not be surprised by the number one story, number one farcical story of 2018. Here we go. The number one story from 2018 in the peak farce stories of the year. Kavanaugh is sworn in after a close confirmation vote in the Senate. Yes, Judge Brett M. Kavanaugh, Brett, I like beer, Kavanaugh, was confirmed to the Supreme Court by one of the slimmest margins in American history, locking in a solid, quote, conservative majority on the court and capping a rancorous battle that began as a debate over judicial ideology and concluded with a national reckoning over sexual misconduct. This was, of course, because Kavanaugh, when he was just about to be voted on, was accused by one Christine Blasey Ford, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, of assaulting her at a party when they were in high school. This led to debate over what constitutes proof and if claims are arbitrary or if they're true or false. Should we hashtag believe all women, even though I think something like 4 of the accusations against Kavanaugh have been proven to be made up whole cloth. This was a part of the growing Me Too movement in the year, so that played a huge role in this. And it became a rallying call, especially after Kavanaugh's opening statement when he came back to testify. And Kavanaugh gave a sort of righteously... let me put it this way. He defended himself with righteous indignation. And it really was, I think, a galvanizing moment for this show and for our listeners and for anyone who opposes sort of social justice as a concept.
And what word did he use in that defense, Daniel?
I like beer.
Beer?
Yes, he did use the word I like beer, yes. As a straight edge person, though, not what I was talking about. No, he used the word farce at one point.
Yeah,
he called it a farce. The Midside has reached the nation's capital beyond Daniel.
How do you know I didn't write that for him?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, with the way it was written, I wouldn't be surprised if you did. If you like revealed that right now, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. It wouldn't even surprise me.
I'm unequivocally not revealing that right now. Let's be very clear.
Let me be clear.
That's right.
I like beer. The fact that this news story encapsulated everything, and then the word farce was used in the story itself is beyond. It's surreal.
Everything, I think it ties into the theme that's really been the theme this year of tribalism. Right. Everyone just followed their tribal lines on this, both were wrong. Right. It was the mid side that was the correct side. Our side that was the correct side on this issue.
Well, let's be clear about that, right? Since we're being clear, let's be clear. And what are the two sides, and how did the mid side work in between those to show what was actually correct? Because we were on the side of Brett Kavanaugh, and we thought he didn't do anything, and we thought his speech was righteously indignant, which would be considered a right-wing side.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah. Let's knock out the easy one first. The easy one is everyone who was against having a quote-unquote conservative judge just immediately jumped on the bandwagon, right? Like, there was no considering evidence, looking at what's going on, considering facts or reality. It didn't matter. It was, let me search through and find things that I can use, rhetorical things I can use to make this not happen.
Right, because he was a rich white male growing up.
Right, right. And I think the difference between on the right wing side, the right wing side was also doing the same thing. They were also looking at it from a tribal lens. They weren't looking at defending someone based on their arguments for doing this was not based on saying like, hey, these are arbitrary statements. You know that we. Like this is really hard to even untangle looking at the process of how this even came to be was like a minor focus, right? Like none of those things really matter. I mean, I'm sure there's other things that were wrong on the right hand side, Daniel.
Well, the other element of the right wing side of this was the side that was quasi caving to a lot of the left. I'm thinking of Senator Flake and eventually Senator Murkowski.
Senator Flake, the best name man ever.
The senator whose name wouldn't even be taken directly from Atlas Shrugged because people would have accused Ayn Rand of being too on the nose. But the point being that there was a contingent on the right that basically made this go on much longer than it had to or needed to go on because they kept waffling back and forth between which tribe they wanted to be a part of, depending on which they thought had the most power in any given week.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that the right had both a tribalistic nature of sort of circle the wagons for our guy, and then also a tribalistic nature that was more emotionalist and more second-handed even. So pick your poison there. And then of course the mid side, I think really, and maybe William introduced the word first, but I think really bridges this gap with the word arbitrary. And by talking exactly about what evidence means, what claims about truth mean, how you discern those things, and pointing out that Blasey Ford's claims are not true or false. They are arbitrary. And that is because they can neither be proven to be true or false. They are just claims. And claims without evidence are arbitrary. the end.
Daniel, for some reason, when I hear the word arbitrary, I think of Admiral Akbar saying it, or the Gungan King saying it.
Star Wars on the brain, huh?
Well, I don't know. It's just like, arbitrary, it's a trap!
It's arbitrary. Yeah. I can't do an Admiral Akbar. It's not my thing. But
no, and I think that's the thing, and what makes it hard to be in the midside and hard to see the value of being in the midside. And I don't say that as like saying I'm having a hard time being in the midside. I grew up here. I live here. This is my life. Welcome, everyone. I'm inviting you in. That's why I created this. This is where the term came from. But I'm saying I understand why from the outside in, you could look at it and say, aren't they just right wing? Because oftentimes I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid of people being like, oh, aren't you all right? Or aren't you, you know, right wing?
Well, isn't that a common that's a common reflex notion right now on the far left is yes. Everything that's not social justice is automatically Nazi or right wing or alt
right. Right. Well, because of the tribalism, and they don't see it based upon the principles. And when it's tribalism, everything is arbitrary. So they don't believe you can actually believe anything different from them. They just believe that if you are different than them, it's because you're arbitrarily choosing to be against them. And that's why this Kavanaugh case is such a important case in the number one news story of the year, is because when you look at him, and we'll talk more about his opening statement in a bit, I believe.
Yeah.
When you look at him, it's a litmus test.
When the Weinsteins, Dave Rubin, Jordan Peterson, and PewDiePie are all Nazis, something is wrong with you. Right, like you, something is wrong with you.
That's funny. Yeah.
All right, any other final thoughts on the news of this past year? Are we ready to move on?
Let's move on.
Let's move on to the Peak Farce Awards in The Hope for Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. A new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. So we're going to do things a little bit differently this year. Usually we give the Peak Farce Audience Award first, but we're going to give that last because the Midsiders, you are the centerpiece of our show. You are the centerpiece of our community here. So I want to give that last because now we've renamed these. If you remember, if you've been in the midside for a few years now, you know we used to do the best and the rest every year where we talked about what was very popular and good and then what was not so popular but still good and we wanted to give attention to. Now, I could name like pop punk bands like With Confidence put out a really good album, Love and Loathing, and Broadside, I don't remember if their album was 2 years ago, but they gave a great interview about the importance of being selfish. So with my little niche community, I can always come up with that stuff. But otherwise, Daniel and William, I wanted to get rid of Best and Rest because I don't feel like my perception is that we didn't have a whole lot of great coming out of our culture this year.
It certainly was a down year. I don't know if that's simply because I engaged in less culture and thus only got to see the bad up until the point where my son was born and then I basically withdrew from all civilization, or if it generally was down. William, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is as the sort of traditional media, the legacy media, kind of continues its downward spiral into social justice. Like, I found myself spending more and more time with content creators on YouTube. And so I think that probably this year it makes a lot of sense to not have the rest. But I think next year we're going to see some content creators from YouTube showing up on the rest. Or maybe not on YouTube, but on other platforms. You're going to see more good content be polished and come out on Netflix and YouTube and Amazon. Like these things are happening. They're just kind of starting. This to me really feels like a transition year.
Yeah, that's a great point, because when you said that, I immediately thought of something that was just hanging in my psyche that I didn't even remember. But Cobra Kai, the YouTube Red series, was phenomenal. I think it was every episode was great until maybe the last episode. It was very pro-masculine It was very anti the common culture, and it was done in a very intelligent, integrated, entertaining way. So there is some good stuff out there. It's just I didn't think there was enough for an entire award show for us to individually go through our favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I were to give one shout out for this year, something that surprised me, it was the stand-up special by Ryan Hamilton called Happy Face. It's rare that I add a new comedian to my life who I think is worth time and attention, but I was impressed with this rookie offering, and so much so that I went to go see him in person, and he did not disappoint. So I look forward to more of him as we go forward. But honestly, other than that stand-up performance, there wasn't a lot this year that impressed me, save for a few things that we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah, and myself, I continue to just watch professional wrestling and Ninja Warrior and sports now because it's easier because eventually I expect to be hit in the gut with social justice at some point in a show. I mean, even South Park scared me for a little bit this year, where yeah. In their second to last episode, they had a Marxist box, literally, and he was literally just quoting Marxism. Now, they completely undermined that and were in favor of the free market, and they satirized people's anti-Amazon perspective in the finale, but it was literally conceivable watching that first part of the finale and sitting there for a week and go, have we lost South Park too? Because they even apologized to Al Gore and said Man Bear Pig, a.k.a. global warming, was real.
Yeah. Crazy. What a year. 2018. Farce all around. Let's get to it.
So let's do it. So the first award we always give is the Narcissist of the Year. Self-explanatory. Years have been dominated. So 2017 was Donald Trump. 2016 was Hillary Clinton. 2015 was Donald Trump. 2014 was Obamacare architect Jonathan Gruber.
I remember that guy. I have a t-shirt with his face on it. Now, 2015 Donald Trump, were we a little bit ahead of the game on Donald Trump then if we were giving out a Narcissist of the Year award to him in 2015?
I think he definitely gets an honorable mention this year.
He's gotta, right?
Having him there for 2015, it should have been inevitable that he would have been president at that point. When you made your 0% prediction, Daniel, you should have looked back and been like, no, 2015, he has to be president.
That's right.
And he received two votes from midsiders out there. So two of the votes for Narcissist of the Year went to Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton also received a vote. And there are good cases for both of them. We talked about that. There were good cases for both of them. Emmanuel Macron was nominated. Mm. Elon Musk was nominated. Logan Paul was nominated. And as William says, we're starting to see that creep in of the YouTube crowd, the YouTube generation. He was, of course, nominated for thinking it was a good idea to go to the suicide forest in Japan and film an actual suicide for hits on his YouTube page.
That's just smart marketing.
It got him attention. No news. Any news is good news, right?
That's right.
But
none of these could reach our winner this year, right?
No, and go ahead, Daniel. I know you're passionate about this one, so.
Oh, no, I don't. No, of course I will. The Narcissist of the Year award in 2018 goes to CNN as indicative of all the media, but in particular CNN.
CNN.
When you can out-narcissist Donald Trump in the year 2018, you have done something horribly wrong. And CNN just made everything about them this year. Every opportunity to make the story about them, themselves, CNN, they took. And that is the worst of the worst possible qualities you want in a media outlet, particularly this year. The incident with the reporter, what was his name?
Acosta? Yeah.
Yeah. Where they just took that and just ran with it for as much as it was worth, even though it was a nonsense. It was a zero of a story. They made it into a story about them, the victims.
Well, and it started with the whole, what was it, this is a Apple or whatever, like, campaign at the beginning of the year.
This is not an Apple.
Yeah. They have made everything. I mean, they've been playing into Trump's hand the entire year, and I expect this to continue right into the midterms.
Or past the midterms.
Into the presidential election. Sorry. I've got 2018 on the brain right now.
Jet lag. So, yes, Justin, I mean, the whole media could win this award, right? Like, the media this year has just been abysmal in this horrible tizzy trying to go after Trump. But CNN has just been a particular kind of narcissist that is unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you say media, I want to be clear that I personally include social media in that as well. Because no matter what the story was, right? I think the meme even came out in 2017. Fuck 2017. It was, oh, suddenly there's a bunch of lawyers on Twitter now, right? Everyone had their law degree on Twitter. And it's the same thing for any story, anything that comes out, be it a movie review, be it a school shooting, be it the Brett Kavanaugh case, everything immediately becomes about yourself. Oh, what's your experience, yes, right? And that's what we talked about with the Parkland survivors. Oh, well, it's all about their experience. And that's how we can know about gun control and what the principles of our nation are, the principles, right, of our nations are. It's all about that. And so CNN represents that exactly. I joked that maybe we should just rip off Time magazine, where they, was it 2017, they gave the person of the year to you? And I was like, maybe we should do that for the year.
What's the 2018 person of the year? Isn't it the media?
Is it?
It's... I would like to explain to Time magazine what the word person means.
Well, to be fair, we're giving Narcissist of the Year to CNN.
So the Time person of the year, it was the Guardians, they called it, and it was all reporters and that guy that got killed in Turkey. Right? Am I remembering this right?
I think so. I think that's correct. It's amazing. The only industry that pats themselves on the back more, I think, is Hollywood, which I do... You know, obviously it's part of the larger media, but we're distinguishing here between quote unquote journalism and entertainment. But my God, the back padding.
All right, let's move on to our next award. Our next award is the John Rawls Social Justice Warrior Trophy for the advancement of a batshit crazy ideology. We've had some great winners in the history of our show. Of course, last year, 2017, was Antifa. That hit close to home here in the Mid-Side, literally hit close to home.
Yeah.
And so they continued in 2018. 2016, we had the Fidel Castro eulogizers, because, you know, whenever a dictator dies, it's always good to eulogize and talk about how great he was. Then we had a tie in 2015. We had Bernie Sanders for everything he does. And again, Bernie's still going strong. He was almost the Democratic nominee. And Yale students for their historical revisionism. And we talked about at the top now how colleges, universities, Yale, Harvard, the Ivy League is more about social justice. So that's still going strong. So, Daniel, you're talking about we prognosticated with the Narcissist of the Year award. It looks like we're onto something here as well. And then 2014, yeah, BuzzFeed's Ariane Lang for her article, 12 Female Characters Who Keep Shaving Despite Constant Peril. You know, we got to promote that naturalism. You gotta have that naturalism. When Ripley's fighting the alien, she better not have shaved.
That's right.
So let's look at some of the nominees for this year. We have Bernie Sanders again, Angela Merkel, Christine Blasey Ford, which is interesting. Ooh. That's a controversial nomination. David Buckle, who set himself on fire for environmentalism. That's pretty batshit crazy. I don't know if he advanced anything, though, because I think, and Daniel, again, you can announce this award. I think that the woman we gave it to, I think she did a lot to advance her cause.
Yeah, it was a runaway winner this year. I talk about a category that really you could have had as many nominations as you wanted. It wouldn't have mattered because this woman would have taken home the award. And that is the winner of this year's John Rawls Social Justice Award goes to Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, man.
For making socialism cool again.
Her airhead comments on Twitter have been so entertaining.
She is simultaneously evil and millennial and hilarious all at the same time. She is the gift that will keep on giving, certainly into 2019. I did like that before Congress begins, she's taking a couple weeks off to de-stress. Before she starts any work as a congresswoman, she's taking a few weeks off to de-stress. So I'm sure she'll handle the rigors of Congress perfectly well. And we wish her all the best, except that we don't.
Well, William, you mentioned David Hogue at the top of the show, how during the news about how you're wondering why he got ahead when he was a white male. Isn't she just the Hispanic female version of David Hogue?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe she should have gotten into Harvard instead of him. I don't know.
Where did she go to school? Do we know?
Boston College.
She was a barista she started.
I'm not joking either.
That's a lot of funny because I like just completely. I just spit into the wind there.
Yep.
I don't know 100%, but I'm pretty sure it was Boston College. Yeah. So you know she's super smart. Loved her comments about how the unemployment numbers were down only because people were working two jobs.
Yep.
That's good.
Yep.
Love that. She also tweeted out some erroneous facts about how we could pay for Medicare for all. She doesn't really understand, anything. So in many ways, she's perfect. Like, she's the quintessential congresswoman. So I look forward to the many joys of her over the next few years.
Let's move on to some positive awards here. Next, we have the Tom Brady Medal for greatness in the face of doubters.
Ooh.
Last year, 2017, we gave it to the guy who created cryptocurrency. I say the guy who created cryptocurrency because not only can I say his name, but we don't really know if his name is really his name, because I believe James, you know, God rest his soul, he's still alive, he's just not on the show. James said that he's been anonymous, and that name may even be a pseudonym, supposedly a Japanese.
It's definitely a pseudonym. Yeah, definitely.
But again, prognosticating, cryptocurrency took off even more this year. It was really trendy in the fall of 2018.
It's true.
2016, we gave it to Zack Snyder for the ultimate edition of Batman versus Superman. Because, of course, again, prognosticating, we've seen the effects of this on the culture, right? How terrible everyone says he is, and how terrible they said the movie is, and then we saw what happened to Justice League. And then 2015 and 2014... we gave the award to its namesake, Tom Brady.
So will Tom Brady win this year?
In fact, no sports figures were nominated this year.
Oh, man.
So the nominations we had were Maxime Bernier by starting his own party in Canada and gaining a lot of support. Jordan Peterson, Kanye West. I think somebody really liked the segment Good Kanye, Bad Kanye. But to be fair to that nomination, I do think Kanye, in his insanity, and I use that term very seriously, sabotages his greatness more than most people. Because he does say some really good things, and then he says some really batshit things, and you're just like, Kanye, how can I like you? Which makes you both doubt him and think he's great together. So in a way, he kind of embodies this award. Cody Wilson for getting the feds to back down on 3D printed guns and their plans. Jeff Bezos, and somebody nominated Chris Pratt.
Oh,
that's because, remember, he had that whole like, oh, on Instagram, he did the sign language thing and people got mad or some shit about some social justice thing. And then he was in one of the top grossing movies, if not the top grossing movie of the year. So,
well, who's going to tell us who won? William?
No, I'm going to tell you who won, because you know what? I have something personal to say about this.
Okay.
The winner this year is Brett Kavanaugh, not only for being nominated to the Supreme Court, but for me personally, I'm giving this award for his opening statement for his defense, because I watched that. I was on break at my state job, and I watched that during lunch. And I was sitting there next to other state employees, and people, like, whenever he said anything, without even listening to him, they were like, liar, you're a terrible person, liar. And I'm watching it, and for this man to have the courage to be righteously indignant, call out exactly what's going on. This is a hit. This is a political hit. I've done nothing wrong in my life. And to show vulnerability, this is everything the left has been saying is what men need to do to be healthy, as far as, you know, the opposite of toxic masculinity. And he did it, and he stood by his principles, And that is exactly what I want a Supreme Court justice to be. Someone who acts with the ultimate objectivity and the ultimate justice, especially when it comes to himself. And this is a perfect example of how people misunderstand being rational and living a rational, healthy life. You can be completely emotional when living a rational, healthy life. That doesn't make you an emotionalist. It just means you figured out what is the right emotional reaction to have. And he laid his arguments, and then when he started talking about his values, his emotions shone through. He did not lead with the emotions, but when it was appropriate, he felt them and he wasn't afraid to show them. He is the example of what a man is.
Amen, brother. Yep,
completely agree. Not much more to say.
What a recap. I will only add a small button, which is very small, which is that how much, you know, as wonderful and appropriate and poetically just as his defense was, think about what the inverse would have been, i.e. if he had just gone out there and done some standard, you know, if I ever hurt anyone, I didn't mean to hurt anyone, I'm sorry, you know, this is in the past, etc. Like, how big of a blow would that would have been? So to think about, my point being to put the greatness of that act in contrast to what it could have been if he was a lesser person, or if he had decided he didn't want to stand on his morals. So congratulations to Brett Kavanaugh.
Our next award is the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award. This is given to the event, accomplishment, or person that would reduce Zack Snyder to the odd of the point that he would only call it awesome. Last year was sports. We gave it to the New England Patriots for their 28-3 comeback in the Super Bowl. That is a once in an NFL accomplishment. 2016, we gave it to Uber and Lyft for leaving Austin after the city passed its anti-rideshare regulations. 2015, we gave it to Carrie Fisher for her defense of slave Leia, rest her soul. And 2014, we gave it to Firestone for fighting Ebola in Africa more effectively than any government did. And let's go through the nominees for this year. We have the Thai Cave Rescue, Alex Epstein, The Good Place, Dwayne Johnson, which I did not submit that, but I am partial to that, Boston Dynamics, and then William.
Is that the robot people?
Yeah, the robot people, which whoever said that may regret that in 5 years when we're in the Matrix, but it's a different story. William, I think you should announce this winner, though, and explain.
Yeah, so there was some highlights this year, but I think one stood out, and that was this year's winner, who is Dave Rubin. So why Dave Rubin? He's been doing some awesome work on his YouTube channel, doing long-form interviews with lots of different folks. He's been taking a lot of heat, being called he's a classical liberal leaning to the left, but he's been... because of his consistency on free speech, he's now alt-right, right or Nazi, depending on who you talk to. and even more recently, we've had this huge dust-up. We've mentioned it a little bit with Patreon deciding to boot Sargon of Akkad, and then PayPal bullying the alternative to Patreon, Subscribestar, into not accepting any more PayPal payments. So now all of Subscribestar has been shut down for a week or so, not being able to process payments, all because of Sargon. And what we've seen is Dave Rubin and Jordan Peterson saying, hey, this has got to stop. You know, we need someone to actually be a platform and not bring these politics into an arbitrary mob justice into the realm of publishing. And they're starting an alternative. And his principled stance, though, on free speech is really what pushed it over the top here. You've seen, I think even Sargon has said, like, oh, we need to regulate these companies. But Rubin has been consistent here, saying, like, no, we need to have a market solution to this problem. And I think that putting your money where your mouth is really what this award is all about. And that's exactly what we are seeing happen. I think going into 2019, we're going to see this is a seismic shift in internet culture right now. this was, even people that aren't political have been pulling their Patreon account as artists or content creators. And also, we've seen people exodus Patreon, like actual people that are supporting folks and sending notes to content creators saying, like, hey, we don't necessarily agree with Sargon, but what Patreon is doing is wrong, and we don't want to participate in this platform anymore. And so, yeah, I think this year's winner, for all those reasons, is Dave Rubin, for his continued and consistent advocacy for free speech and a free market.
And to add on to that, the willingness to engage in debate with all sides of the aisle, that's part of the free speech to me.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got some great interviews. If you haven't watched his channel on YouTube, you can also download them as podcasts, just with some fascinating folks. And he's just, like I said, just so consistent on this free speech issue and saying, like, hey, the way you debate bad ideas is by, or the way you win against bad ideas is by debating them with good ideas. And that's exactly what the Midside is all about.
Life goal, be interviewed by Dave Rubin.
We have a podcast, so we're on the way there, maybe? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Somebody get us on the Rubin Report.
That's right. Also, just get me a Rubin. I'm hungry.
Don't you have a wife to make you a sandwich?
She's taking care of the baby, barefoot, in the other room, so I can do the podcast. Okay. American dream.
Millennial American dream.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's give out our last award that we're giving out, that the hosts are giving out, before we move on to the Peak Farce Audience Award, the Romantic Manifestation Award. This is an award that is really important to the show. It's had some great winners in the past. It's about who created the greatest romantic work of art in the last year. This year was tough, just as last year, I think, was tough as well. Last year, we gave it to Patty Jenkins for the No Man Land scene in Wonder Woman. If you remember, that's that great scene where she goes across the no man's land in World War One, and is just very heroic and epic in the way it was done. It's possible Zack Snyder helped shoot that scene behind the scenes. We'll never know, though, because WB hates Zack Snyder. Ooh. 2016, we gave it to Damien Chazelle for La La Land.
Deserved.
2015, we gave it to Brian Fuller for Hannibal.
Well deserved.
2014, we gave it to Christopher Nolan for Interstellar.
Super well deserved.
This year, the nominations were all over the place, as would be expected. Somebody said, nothing stands out. Can I recast La La Land as my vote? Which is funny, but also kind of a statement on Damien Chazelle, because he did release First Man this year, which was a bit of a disappointment for us here in the Midside. Bohemian Rhapsody, Michael Schur for The Good Place, Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch for Glow, which I love Glow. The second season's been incredibly consistent, what I've gotten through so far. Those are pretty much the nominations, besides what we're going to give for the award. And again, Daniel, I think you should... You know what? Actually, I'm going to announce this one because I'm the romantic art representative on this show. That's we right. are giving this award... Oh, wait, another honorable mention. I want to give an honorable mention to Ralph Wrecks the Internet, or Ralph Breaks the Internet, excuse me. Yeah. Besides the name, Ralph Breaks the Internet was very well done. I gave it a very glowing review on the show, so I'd like to give an honorable mention to that. Big Mouth was actually pretty good, too, besides the fucking episode where they just were in the trenches in the pocket of Planned Parenthood. But that's another discussion. But just the way they're romanticizing puberty is very well done. But the winner for the Romantic Manifestation Award in 2018 is Brad Bird for Incredibles 2. Take it away, Daniel.
Yes. Talk about a movie that could have easily been a massive failure. And partially what I mean there is the first Incredibles. Justin, if I remember right, you're not as big a fan as most people, but most people consider the first Incredibles to be almost an objectivist movie in how it deals with heroes and how it deals with adversity and people of ability in general. And so the follow-up to that film could have easily been much worse. It could have went in a direction, because Brad Bird has been accused of being an objectivist, and he's sort of outright expressed that he's not. So it could have gone in a direction that was almost apologetic for the first Incredibles, but it did not. It built on the themes and in ways made it much more integrated. And in fact, Justin makes an argument that it is a better movie than The Incredibles. For that full take, you're going to want to look up the episode. But overall,
but just a short recap of that take. It's basically the plotting is so much better in the second one. I often found myself bored in the first one because it's a very repetitive plot. Get on the island, get captured, escape. Get on the island, get captured, escape. I mean, the only thing that's more repetitive is Lost. Back across the island. That's the only two plans you people have.
So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, not the least of which because of the music, but also because of the humor and the writing and the plotting, and everything was integrated, and it made for a spectacular film in a year of otherwise not a lot of good romantic art. So congratulations to Brad Bird for The Incredibles 2.
And don't forget the baby. The baby was incredible.
Jack-Jack. I would watch a whole movie of Jack-Jack and a raccoon fighting. Hour and a half, I think.
That was probably the best just one sequence in that movie. If I had to pick a visual sequence, that's probably the standout there.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so let's do this, ladies and gentlemen. Let's give the Peak Farce Audience Award, according to you, the Midsiders out there. So we've been giving this award. This will be the third year we'll give it. Last year, the award was given to an article that William submitted, which actually has become the reason for his introduction on this show. Black men are the white people of black people. Which, of course, also hits with the whole idea of what was it that what was the article, William, about gay men?
Gay men,
their privilege?
Gay white men lost their privilege now because they're because now that we have the right to marry, we're no longer we've lost the we're above the Mason-Dixon line of privilege. So
careful there.
So of course that still is resonating to this day with collectivism run amok. 2016 was a tie. We gave it to University Safe Space Training says accepting homosexuality is homophobic, which I think we're still seeing that nowadays. And
yeah,
Professor,
definitely.
If you read to your kids, you're unfairly disadvantaging others.
Oh, my God.
So this year had so much farce that a lot of things received votes. Of course, we started off the year strongly, and this got a vote. Should schools ban kids from having best friends? Then we had Justin Trudeau interrupting a woman to tell her to use people kind instead of mankind because it's more inclusive.
How is he not a nominee for Narcissist of the Year?
Because he's Canadian. They're too polite to be narcissistic. The patriarchal race to colonize Mars is just another example of male entitlement. Man who is raised by wolves in a cave admits he's disappointed with human life. And as one Midsider told me, she said, I think we're all disappointed with human life this year. There's, of course, the Slippery Slope article. After murder rate passes and after murder rate passes New York City, that's a poorly written clause. It's after murder rate passes New York City's murder rate. London Mayor Sadiq Khan calls for sharper knife control, which barring
hilarious.
The grammatical error, that's a good, a very funny headline. Then, of course, we have the straw ban, if we all remember. No plastic straws in
California
anymore.
We're still living. We're still living the straw ban right now.
Yeah.
Never forget.
But the most farcical, the Peak Farce Award for 2018, as voted by you, the Midsiders, is thanks for not raping us, all you good men, but it's not enough.
I think the audience did a fine job picking this article. This is tribalism in its peak farcical form. Of course, since you have a penis or you've had an adidectomy, you want to rape people. Because let's remember, it's not just women who menstruate, and it's not just men who rape.
But it's not just that, William. It's that it's not enough to not rape. And it shows how with social justice and the left, it's never going to be enough. They're going to use your tribalism to make you feel guilty and get your loyalty to them.
Yes. Take all my unearned guilt, please, social justice priest, and absolve me from it.
And of course, we remember the article was just a woman fucking yelling at her husband for... not being obedient to her.
I just want to know, like, when did I not count it as a man? Or maybe they think I do want to rape women somehow? Like, this is, yeah. I've never understood the all men are rapists thing.
Give it time, William. Give it time.
We just need to get you into conversion therapy, William. Then you'll want to rape women.
Maybe that's what conversion therapy is. Jeez. Yeah.
You never went? That they didn't offer you that training as a kid?
No.
They're like, hey,
no.
You just hit puberty. Come over here in this room and we'll teach you about raping women.
No, I missed that class.
Well, the show has reached a new low, which is appropriate for the end of the year. But
well, thank you, audience, for this great pick. That was a great pick.
It was a fantastic job, not just on that article, but for submitting many articles throughout the year, not just for the show, but also for Woke or Joke, for Life on the Midside, for all the fun segments that we do. We really couldn't do this show without you, the audience. And we hope you'll help us continue it growing in the new year by telling a friend about the show.
It's really that plug wasn't even in the outline. There is no outline.
There is no outline.
When there's no outline, we just randomly plug.
It's chaos.
All right, let's wrap up
it's
this
anarchy.
Year. Let's wrap up this year. What did we learn this year, William?
Well, I learned so much this year, but one of the best things I learned this year is that we have such a great audience. I've enjoyed so much talking with folks on Discord and on Twitter, really just witnessing the farce together. This has been so therapeutic and enjoyable. I look forward to the show every week and can't wait to see all the farce for 2019.
Daniel?
I learned that there's a perhaps small but certainly vocal contingent of listeners who actually really love Belichick Your Premises. I have never received so much hate mail as when we stopped doing Belichick Your Premises, which is ludicrous to me. But nonetheless, we did a special edition last week. If you missed that, go back and check it out, and we might do that again in the future, at least for the Super Bowl or something. But we'll try to get more of those in 2019. It's just hard, people. It's just hard.
Really listen to that last episode because it makes me seem like a genius. I went on and on about, what was it, outlier events and how I was scared of that game. Yeah. And then that game was like, didn't everything I was worried about coming true come true, Daniel?
Pretty much. Nostra dumbass. That's you.
Wow. How long have you been saving that one for?
I don't know. It just came to mind.
No,
what did you learn this year, Justin?
Well, I was going to say something about Belichick Your Premises, but all right, I'll just go over what I learned this year.
Yeah.
I learned just how bad California is and just how much worse things are going to get. I really had to take stock of my life and take stock of what's around me and decide what kind of a life I want when literally leftism leads to no middle class. There is no middle class out here. And something I've talked about before on the show is interpersonal hostility. I don't know if I've said that phrase in a while, but interpersonal hostility is real. It is real. And I live it every day in California. It's tough for me beyond the financial aspects of living out here, destroying the middle class. It's just tough for me to go outside. It just always feels like a battle. It always feels like people just don't think anyone else exists. And if you just go outside and you don't have your druthers about you, people are going to walk into you. And no matter where I go, immediately someone cuts in front of me or steals the parking space before I have. And it's just always a battle. And I really had to learn what I would have to do to survive out here. And it made me think of like, what actually is a good life and what is it to be successful? Because I think our culture has been sold so long on, oh, California as exemplary, as the romantic ideal of the American dream, which is very ironic because Hollywood has sold us that idea and they've become super naturalistic. But I think we've been sold that for so long, especially, you know, the weather and so on and so forth, that we miss so much of the value in other places of the country. And that's ultimately why I've really reflected on Florida. And I actually wanted to do a segment on the show, California versus Florida. It never came to fruition, but California spends a lot of time dumping on Florida, talking about how terrible it is. And really the only reason I can think of is because they're threatened by it, because they know it's the better version of them. I mean, the only thing California really has over Florida is that it's not as humid, but some of us, me personally, I like humidity better. I run very dry. So unless you like a desert landscape, then Florida is better. But again, we've been sold on the romantic ideal of California as the romantic ideal of the American dream. But just seeing it and living how much worse it's gotten, I've really learned a lot about it and a lot about myself and what it really takes to really take control of your life and decide what kind of a life you want and how much hard work that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can plug, Daniel.
Well, I'm going to keep it short this week. Really, what we want you to do is tell a friend about this show. If we're going to keep this going, and we'd like to, we need some more Midsiders. So why don't you tell a friend about the show? Tell them to go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes, not just from 2018, but from going all the way back in time. And yeah, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Obviously, there's patreon.com/themidside for now. There's iTunes, Google Play, give us ratings, etc. But until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wozneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a year.
I see what you did there.
Uh-huh.
We probably should have mentioned that we're going to take a few week break, but I think they get it by now.
They probably get the routine at this point.